Let me just give a little background on that case. So I'm a plaintiff in a lawsuit that is currently before the Supreme Court, called Missouri versus Biden, as you mentioned. And the state of Missouri and Louisiana, along with five private plaintiffs, of which I am one, have sued the Biden administration, specifically about a dozen federal agencies, including the White House. And we are alleging that these federal agencies have been coercing and forcing social media companies to censor the constitutionally protected speech of hundreds of thousands of ordinary Americans. And how would the government be capable of doing that? The government's capable of doing that because, again, in this new era of social media, most Americans get their news and their information from social media, right? They get links to the articles that they read to get information on things from their Facebook or their Twitter or their Instagram. They get information about what's going on in the world from those sources. And they contribute to those conversations very often by posting information or sharing information with their followers or with their friends. And so this is the new, social media is the new public square. This is the place where conversations about public policy and about how we're governed happen today all over the world, but certainly in the United States. So this is, if you want to control the flow of information, this is where you go. You try to get some control over the biggest social media companies. And we now know that the government was working to try to do that precisely with the six biggest social media companies out there. We presented evidence of this to the district court, and we got a preliminary injunction against the government from the district court. And basically what that says is, even before the case goes to trial, we're in a very early stage of that case, we think that the government's behavior is so egregious, and you know, we know this case is probably going to take a couple of years to fully litigate, we think the court needs to step in now and stop the government from engaging in this censorship. Otherwise, irreparable harm is going to be done to the plaintiffs and to the people that we're standing in for, to the other Americans who are being censored online. And so the court agreed. In fact, in that district court ruling, the judge released it on July 4th, which is extremely rare to get anything from the courts on a federal holiday, but I think he did it to drive home a point. The judge actually said in that ruling, if what plaintiffs allege is true, this, and by issuing the injunction, he indicated, yeah, it looks like it's true. This is the worst violation of free speech in United States history. That's a federal judge saying that. That's not our lawyers. That's not me saying that. It's a federal judge. And the reason it's the worst violation is when they lean on the social media companies and they get the social media companies to do things like change their algorithms or change their terms of service, that ends up impacting potentially hundreds of thousands of social media accounts and tens of millions of social media posts. So that's how you get a regime where the censorship can be so broad and widespread. And that's why this case is literally unprecedented. Previous cases where the government got involved in censorship, you know, they were leaning on one newspaper or one author, or, you know, remove these three pages from one book and, you know, crossing the line there. And then the court sort of slaps them down, says, no, you can't do that. That infringes on free speech rights that are guaranteed by the First Amendment of the Constitution. Well, in this case, when you gain control of the social media companies, the way that has been happening and really ramped up during COVID, you end up censoring, you know, more people than we can count. So that's the first thing to say about this case, is the breadth and the scope of it are just massive. I think the second important thing to say is that many Americans may not even realize that they have been censored, because the censorship can happen in various ways. It can happen that, as happened with me, one of my first interviews after I challenged the University of California's vaccine mandate in federal court was with an independent journalist named Allison Morrow. Previously had worked for CBS, two-time Emmy Award-winning journalist, but she had a podcast that she did on the side, and she worked actually for the state of Washington as her main job. So I did a podcast interview with her on vaccine mandates. I wasn't talking about safety and efficacy of the vaccine. I was just talking about informed consent and the ethics of forcing it on people, which I was opposed to. That was removed from YouTube, and we knew we had been censored. Your video has been taken down. Allison, incidentally, also lost her job with the state of California. They said, take down that video with Cariotti, or we're going to fire you. So I ended up getting fired from the University of California over the vaccine mandate issue after I challenged the university in federal court. And then the first journalist I talked to about that case ended up being fired. So I felt pretty toxic, like, you know, it's dangerous even to have a conversation with me. But so that's an obvious example where I knew that I was censored, and, you know, we had to go back and put it on Rumble and find other places to post the video. But there's other cases where you don't know that you're being censored. So you post your video and then you share a link to your podcast on Twitter. You share a link to your podcast on, you know, on Facebook. Well, maybe Google deprioritizes your podcast in its search engine. So rather than, you know, being based on the popularity of your podcast and showing up on page one, it's down on page 19. Nobody's ever going to find it if they do a search for, you know, the kind of themes that you cover on your podcast. And when you put it out there on Twitter or Facebook, actually, maybe only, you know, if you're talking to Aaron Cariotti or some other disfavored person, maybe only 5% of your followers actually see that. It doesn't show up in their feed. This is called shadow banning. So you put it out there, but it sort of disappears down a black hole. Or, you know, the 10% of your followers who themselves have the highest following don't see it. The algorithm makes sure that they don't see it. They don't find it. It doesn't come across their feed. And so it can never gain traction and go viral. So by controlling the algorithm, by controlling using these shadow banning, deprioritizing, make it harder to find on searches techniques, they can basically control the flow of information online. There's a novelist named Walter Kern who's been speaking and writing a lot about the Twitter files and the Missouri v. Biden case and the censorship issue. He compares it, what they're doing, to mixing a record. It's a great metaphor. He says, okay, you know, you got a band in the studio there, and you got a guy sitting at the soundboard with all the controls, and there's sophisticated software looking at everything that's happening online, right? All the tweets about vaccines or lockdowns or school closures that are gaining traction. And they notice, oh, these guys have a podcast and they're famous athletes. And so they're starting to become influential voices. And, you know, we considered John Stockton to be a very dangerous man. And we, you know, so we're just going to turn the volume down on the snare drum over there, right? We don't want what he's talking about on his show to gain traction. And so we just make sure that none of his posts ever go viral. And they can do that, actually. And this other guy over here that's got another podcast that's saying all the things that we want them to say about these policies, well, they're not organically and naturally gaining traction and going viral. So we're just going to turn the volume up on that. You know, we need more cowbell and we need less snare drum, and we can mess with the dials and basically make sure that people have access only to the information that we want to promote, and they're denied access to information that we don't like, right? This to me is extremely scary. It is dystopian. Again, I'm not the only one who said that. The federal judge also said this is an Orwellian dystopian scenario. That was in his 155-page injunction ruling. Because if you can control the flow of information online, you can literally control what people think. You can control how these conversations go.